I'm speaking today with Nick Lampson, who is running for Congressional District 14, which is in Galveston, Jefferson, and a bit of Brazoria counties. Representative Lampson, it's a pleasure to talk with you. What made you decide to run for Congress again?
Well, the people. I find it a little bit interesting story in that I had made the decision that I was through with politics. Didn't want to run again, not because I didn't like politics or like being around people, but I had some hard races. I felt like I had given what I could give, and now it's time to rest a little bit. When a young man, Joseph Bogus, put up a website that said Draft Lampson for Congress, it got my attention. And I started getting phone calls, particularly from the Galveston County area, and then it grew into Brazoria County, and then later it came over to my home county of Jefferson. And I found that very interesting, where all of the enthusiasm more or less developed. As it grew, it was the time that the legislature was finishing up its drawing of the district and talk of what was going to be happening in the courts. I started responding interest on the part of the citizens to get me to run. I looked at the map, and when I saw what the map was coming to look like, I began to realize that they were putting together most of the district that I represented from 1996 to 2004. I had my interest piqued, started talking with friends who began to run numbers, and the more I learned, the more interested I became in it. And finally, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee did a poll. That poll, when I saw the results, pushed me over the top, and I said, I've got to go. It's an opportunity to be able to go back and continue to do what I was doing before. I thought that was important. I thought I was doing decent things. When I saw how much the people liked me, I made a very good decision to be back in.
Well, I know a lot of people are excited about that. How has the district changed since you last represented it?
The Johnson Space Center area, the portion of Clear Lake that was in Harris County, has come out, and the portion of Brazoria County, all of Brazoria County, excluding Pearland, is the simplest way to describe it, was put in. But what is interesting about this, I love NASA, first of all, and so that was a little bit of a disappointment to see that it was out. But if you consider what the legislature did, this was one of the few districts that they actually drew the way congressional districts are supposed to be drawn. They created a real community of interest. It is a coastal district. It starts at the Louisiana border, goes down to about Freeport. There are five ports within the district. It is primarily petrochemical, agricultural, all of the things that are associated with a coastline, the water activities, both of commercial and sports fishing, bird watching, bird hunting, a lot of the tourism activities, the amount of cattle, rice that's grown in the area, all are things that I have played some role in when I was in the Congress, and it absolutely fit for these communities to work together to try to make themselves greater over a long period of time. And for one representative to be able to concentrate on those specific issues will be very beneficial to those communities.
As you say, the actual Johnson Space Center is not in that district, but I think it's fair to say that a lot of people who work there are.
Truly.
Truly. So since I know you were well known for, representing the Johnson Space Center and had a lot of policy expertise on space exploration, talk to me a little bit about where you see the U.S. on that now and what you'd like to see.
Well, it's been disappointing to watch what has happened, but the first thing that has to be said is all of the negative things that have been said about NASA are not true. NASA is not drying up and blowing away. We will still have a vibrant space community, a vibrant space activity. We are developing craft, but what's fascinating today is that not just will the government be developing a craft, but we're encouraging private enterprise to develop those craft as well. And the fact that we could easily see a private company be capable of ferrying our astronauts to and from the space station before the government itself becomes owner again of a similar craft, I think is exciting. Always in the past, government is needed to develop something that private enterprise can't or won't do. It doesn't have the ability to do. And then it moved into an area in the airlines as a good example. The Wright brothers invented an airplane. That airplane was sold to the Army. He trained the Army how to use it. It began to be used specifically for governmental purposes, but it wasn't too long before one of those governmental purposes was mail carrying. And once it went from the mail to individuals, and as soon as people started riding in it, then private enterprise took off, and now today we've got huge airline companies that are operated that are operating that business. I truly believe that we will see something similar to that happen in the space community. One of our absolute major goals has to be to prevent any involvement, not any involvement, but a melding of our space activity, space exploration efforts into the military. This needs to be a civilian space activity, civilian science-related activity that concentrates on technology, on what can be done in space, but for us in quality of life here on Earth. I think that there's going to be much more happening, and what we really need is a clear expression of our vision. My guess is that we will be out of low Earth orbit. Right now, low Earth orbit means where the International Space Station is, and our effort to go back and forth to that via the shuttle, which we're no longer using, and that's an unfortunate thing. I wish we had extended it longer. But to the International Space Station, whether we go there on rides on the Soyuz, which is a Russian craft, or whether it becomes the SpaceX company that is likely to be the first company to be able to offer those taxi cab rides to the International Space Station. Whichever one happens, is the primary thing is we still have a major science facility floating in space right now that can give us not only the research that we intended for it to, but we can also begin to use manufacturing capabilities up there to grow things like human cells that can address diabetes differently than what we are. So there are good, clear ways that if only we would stay focused and make the true commitment that we can and did and must do again for space, we can get a huge return from our involvement. I see a lot happening that's going to be positive, and I think that it's going to be real exciting when we are capable again of setting goals that are great, whether it is to do further exploration on Mars, whether it is to begin thinking about what we can do at what's called the Lagrange points, where gravity, the pull of gravity between Earth and the Moon balance out, so we can put a station up there for purposes of allowing us to go further out away from low Earth orbit. I'm rambling a little bit, but the point is we have people who have great ideas for what we can do in space. I hope we pay a lot more attention to them, give them the opportunity to share their vision with the country, and then have leaders that are powerful enough to express that and motivate the citizens of this nation again to believe that what we do in space as far as space exploration is great and can change the world again.
All right. Talk to me a little about what you think needs to be done with the economy. Obviously, we're coming out of some very tough times. Things are starting to get better. What sorts of things do you want to see, would you push for in Congress to keep the recovery going and get the economy on track?
There's a guy named David Walker who runs the Peterson Foundation, and he also was a co-founder of an organization called No Labels. But the Peterson Foundation has for a very long time been very much like the Concord Coalition, which has promoted for years a balanced approach to attacking the problems that we face economically. Obviously, our debt is one of the major problems that we have with our economy. Our debt has reached a point that the interest on that debt is eating us up. So we must get our deficit under control so that we can begin to pay down on our debt. And you don't do that by what some are proposing to do, which is stop spending. Stopping spending or slowing down spending and being more thoughtful about our spending clearly is needed. But just like you can't do it with stopping spending, you can't do it only with raising revenue. You have to do both, and you have to see our way through to finding innovative ways to making the economy grow. And that means an investment in the economy. So I would hope that we would see spending, if you want to put it in terms of that, in areas where we can clearly create large numbers of jobs, hopefully create more businesses to hire the people that are going to go into those jobs. One of the greatest economic stimuli that have occurred in the history of our country was in the 50s when we decided to build the interstate highway system. That literally exploded the middle class of the United States of America. We were able to put everyone in the country to work. And we gave the ability for businesses, manufacturing businesses, to bring product into and ship stuff out of this country differently than what it existed before. I think that we have to concentrate on all the points that I just made, whether it is slowing our spending and being more thoughtful in that regard, being very prioritizing with what we have to do. Find new sources of revenue that come into the government, because you cannot solve it without having additional revenue needs. Growing the economy and making sure that a large part of all of that comes with infrastructure development. I think those are going to hold the keys to what we do into our future as far as solving our economic problems are concerned.
One of the issues that was being talked about when you were last in Congress was immigration reform, and that's still a very contentious issue. Sure. What does comprehensive immigration reform look like to you?
Well, by addressing a number of things, by addressing the border and by addressing the employment needs and interests, finding people who are here a clear path toward citizenship or legality of some kind. And I'll start. Probably the biggest mantra that we hear from most people is control our border. We're doing a better job at controlling our border. I'm not one who wants to build a wall across the half of this continent and divide us away from Mexico. Mexico has problems that I hope that we will join the leadership of Mexico, particularly this new administration, which is likely to be run by a guy named Enrique Peña Nieto, to cooperate with him to make sure that we join his effort in fighting their battle against drugs, because their battle against drugs is impacting us, and it's causing huge corruption in that nation, which is wanting a lot of their citizens to leave that country. And couple that with when we were growing the number of jobs that we were growing in the United States, we became a magnet for a lot of those citizens to come over here. And then add the other piece in when we cut the quotas for workers to come legally into the United States, seasonal workers, we put serious, serious pressure on our immigration laws. And it caused caused us, in my opinion, to literally create almost an underclass that a lot of employers, I personally believe, did not want to solve, because it gave them a group of people that they could hire and pay substandard wages to, almost to the point of exploiting that group of people on this earth, which I find fault with. I don't think that's a smart thing for anybody anywhere in the world to do. So I would, when we continue to work on controlling our border with electronics, with proper handling of guard crossings and such, that's one thing that we are addressing, and we're putting the money there to accomplish those tasks. I think we need to change our immigration laws again and recognize that we do need people from other places in the world, as we always have in this nation, to come here and take many of those jobs. We want to be very focused on who we want to come in, but we have to have a legal means for them to do so. That means some really serious attention being given to the rules that we pass and the quotas that we make, allowing folks to come in. Recognize that we created part of the problem when we arbitrarily decreased almost to nothing many of those quotas. And I'll give you one specific example. We have a large fishing industry along the coastline, and for as many decades as I've known of, there have been a certain group of people who come to work in the shrimping and oyster and other fishing industry. They started having such pressures that they were unable to continue to do that, and it has seriously adversely impacted that industry, something clearly that we need to address. And then another piece of it is to make sure that we don't encourage employers in the United States to only seek people who are not just only seek, but to seek people as future employees who are not citizens or who are here otherwise only for the purpose of trying to get whatever money they can, because the pressure means that we can pay them a less than reasonable wage. That's exploitation, and I don't want to see that happen. And then lastly, encourage people who really want to become real citizens of the United States of America by giving them a clear and reasonable path to becoming citizens of the United States. I thought it was abhorrent that when I left the Congress back in 2005, I was involved with two elderly gentlemen who had been picked up by our Immigration and Naturalization Services and were on the verge of being deported. Ultimately, they were deported. Both had been here for almost their entire lives. They were in their late 60s and early 70s. They were grandparents, and their U.S. families were the only family they had known since they were teenagers, when they had left the employ of a ship owner by literally jumping off that ship 50 or 60 years earlier. They built their lives in the United States, grew up as what they thought U.S. citizens, but never became naturalized. We deported both of those gentlemen. They went to places that they could not call home, and we divided their families. I think that is as bad a message as we can possibly send any place in the world. We are more sensitive to that in this nation, and I think that we need to take action to make sure that we allow people to be treated differently into the future.
Every congressional race you've been in, at least since I can recall starting to follow them, certainly in 08 and 06 and 04, they've been high-dollar races, a lot of money spent, a lot of money raised, a lot of money spent, millions of dollars for congressional races. You know, especially in light of Citizens United and the super PACs, do you think, and what, if anything, do you think should be done about that? Do you think, what kind of campaign finance reform do you think would make sense?
Citizens United goes away ASAP. It needs truly to be clear, I know it was declared to be constitutional by the Supreme Court. We need to find a way to change it. If we can pass whatever legislation is necessary to step on that decision, it needs to be done quickly. Clearly, it is taking away the voice of citizens. When an individual or a handful of individuals can put 90% of the money that's being spent on politics into the advertising for a few candidates, then obviously it takes away people who can only maybe be willing to contribute $10 or $20 toward a campaign. Their voice is not as heard as someone who spends $1 million and buys their way into the inner circle of someone who is running for public office. So I hope that we will quickly get a handle on it and change it. I will stand and vote for any campaign finance reform that we can put forth. We have to get money out of this system. It is the worst thing that a candidate can do. It is an even worse thing for a member of Congress to have to spend two-thirds of their time not being a representative, but seeking money for re-election. I think that it borders on corrupting the system if it doesn't corrupt the system, and I would seek ways to change it. I will certainly support anybody's recommendation, and I will actively seek legislation recommendations from the legislative, the Congressional Legislative Services, who have been working on things like this for a long time in the Congress. I hope we can change. We've got to get money out of the system, or we're not going to be able to solve the problems that we face.
You have always had a reputation for being a, you know, consensus builder, bipartisan, reach across the aisle kind of guy. I think it's fair to say that, you know, certainly in the last couple of sessions, Congress has gotten more polarized than it's ever been before. And after the 2010 election, let's just say some of the people on the other side of the aisle are maybe less interested in reaching back. What does it mean to be bipartisan, a consensus builder across the aisle in this day and age?
It means that we might have an opportunity to end gridlock if we create some of that bipartisanship. We can't continue to only attack your opponent without coming up with a reasonable solution in return. If we can't find a way to seek common ground and have civility in doing so, then we're going to continue to end up with gridlock. And what happens when you're in gridlock? Nothing. No decisions are being made, and that's a large part of the reason why the approval ratings of Congress is down in the range of 9% today. That's atrocious. We have been the leader of the world. We will not maintain that status if we don't get back to a point where we can dream and make our dreams become reality. That takes someone, it takes real leadership to get us past that polarization, that division. I love to talk about the example of former Senator Lloyd Benson. When he got the people who were opposed to the deepening and widening of the Houston-Galveston Ship Channel 30, 40 years ago, whenever it was, to meet with the people who were promoting the deepening and widening of the Houston-Galveston Ship Channel. And what he said was, "We each side of this has a problem, but so does the community. If we want to continue to see growth, we have to take some specific action. What can we do, each of the two sides, that can be agreeable to the other that moves this project forward?" And they built a significant amount of environment. They took very specific steps to increase oyster beds, which was one of the things that were that was a problem at the time and a concern at the time. So any time reasonable minds want to solve a problem, they can find a solution. And that's what I want to see happen. We've got to address the redistricting that we have been doing, the gerrymandering, the fact that we have not been creating districts that have common or communities of interest. And when we do harm to the communities, not to the politicians. And I'm hoping that we will find a way that our legislatures in every state in the country will begin to find bipartisan or nonpartisan commissions of some sort to at least reduce the political impact of drawing these boundaries so that we can stop hating each other and start talking to each other again. There are some clear steps that we can take, and I hope I did when I was there before, and I'll work to recreate what we called at that time the Center Aisle Caucus. We may come up with a different name. It doesn't make any difference what you call it. But if you can find people who are moderate enough to be willing to work across that magic center aisle in the House of Representatives to give strength to one side or the other, depending on the quality of the suggestions and proposals that are being made, that's what we've got to be doing. If we're going to just draw a line in the sand and say it's going to be my way or the highway, we're going to get exactly what we're getting right now, and that's gridlock and nothing.
The district you would represent is, as you said earlier on, it's got a lot of refineries, a lot of oil interests. What should energy policy look like that can both accommodate what's in your district, but also take into consideration concerns about the environment and renewable energy and so on and so forth.
Balance, please. It's time for us to get about recognizing there are other ways that we can power ourselves other than using fossil fuels. Fossil fuels, there is a finite amount of fossil fuels, regardless of what it is, whether it is the nuclear fissile materials, whether it is crude oil or natural gas even, which I know that we have huge quantities of because that's what's been in the news. We ought to be doing the research, and we ought to dedicate a portion of all of the resources that we dedicate to exploiting fossil fuels. A portion of that every year should be going to research necessary to create other sources of energy. I've seen some of the most fascinating projects that are not getting adequate attention of the federal government. One of them is where a group of people have taken a gasification project and made it financially feasible to do, where we are taking municipal garbage, both solid and liquid, and turning it into usable energy, whether it is gaseous or liquid. Those are positive things. We've learned now how to lower the price to the point where it is very feasible for any government, almost of any size, local government, to be able to do something with. There are so many ideas that people have that we need to be finding them. We need to do everything that we can to support them, give them the opportunity to put those into place across this country. So balance our energy policy. We wrote a bill, a group of members of Congress, that instantly, it took us 6 weeks to write it, and the day we introduced it, it had 155 or 156 co-signers on the legislation. But because it didn't meet the standards of some of the special interests, the leadership of both parties killed that legislation. So what did we get? Again, nothing. I hope that we can sit down at tables and discuss what the harshest things are on either side and take them out and concentrate on the things that fall in the middle where we can find common ground and move them forward. And we need to place just as much emphasis on renewables as we do on those things that are not renewable and balance our effort out. That's the way we're going to have a balanced policy.
You have an opponent in the primary for the District 14 nomination. When people go to vote in May, why should they vote for you and not your opponent to be the nominee in District 14?
I don't want to make myself sound like an incumbent in today's world, because I am not. I've been out of Congress for two terms, and I am very angry at what I've been seeing happen, as we've already discussed in this in our visit. Things have deteriorated since I left the Congress. But when I first went in 1996, I saw a workable situation. So the knowledge that I have of how Congress can work, the knowledge that I have of seeing Congress not work, the experience that I hold, and what I have learned, the knowledge that I have about how the House of Representatives actually works, and the last thing is the sincerity that I don't mind expressing that I have in representing people and their needs locally, constituent services. I had among the best constituent services office anywhere around here. It gave me the ability to understand the plight of the average citizen. I don't mind stepping up and trying to make a difference in those areas. I think a lot of the people will remember the good works that I did in trying to open a door for them with a federal agency. But if you add all of those together, whether it's the constituent services, the knowledge that I have of the workings of the House of Representatives, the experience that I actually gained while being there, the relationships that I still have with a large number of people from both parties in the House of Representatives, I think will do us very well in the 14th Congressional District. And I'd be honored to serve them, and I hope I have their vote.
Nick Lampson, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you, Charles. It was a pleasure.